Chapter 1. He adored New York City. He idolized it all out of proportion. He romanticized it all out of proportion. Better. To him, no matter what the season was, this was still a town that existed in black and white and pulsated to the great tunes of George Gershwin. Now let me start this over. Chapter 1. He was as tough and romantic as the city he loved. Behind his black-rimmed glasses was the coiled sexual power of a jungle cat. Oh, I love this. New York was his town, and it always would be.
Manhattan, starring Woody Allen.
Well, okay, well, tell me, why'd you get a divorce?
Why? I got a divorce because my ex-wife left me for another woman.
Okay? Really?
Mm-hmm.
God, that must have been really demoralizing.
I don't know. I thought I took it rather well under the circumstances.
Ooh-wee.
I tried to run them both over with a car.
Diane Keaton.
No. You're much different. You're much different.
Yeah?
Yes. You're someone I could imagine having children with.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, hit the lights. Go ahead. Turn them out again.
Michael Murphy.
You don't want to make a commitment, and I don't want to break up my marriage and then find out that we're no good together.
The point is, what the hell am I doing in this relationship anyway? My phone never stops ringing. I could go to bed with the entire faculty of MIT if I wanted to. It's just, I don't know, I'm wasting myself on a married man.
Mariel Hemingway.
See, I'm glad you could get out tonight, you know, because I really did want to see you a lot.
Well, I like it when you get an uncontrollable urge.
Yeah, I know, it's my best feature.
Meryl Streep.
Hey, don't write this book. It's a humiliating experience.
It's an honest account of our breakup.
Jesus, everybody that knows us is going to know everything.
Look at you. You're so threatened.
Hey, I'm not threatened because of the two of us, I was not the immoral, psychotic, promiscuous one. I hope I didn't leave out anything.
Anne Byrne.
Oh. Is this true? Did you make love with Jill and another woman?
Did she put that in there? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, did she want it? I didn't want to be a bad sport.
I came here to strangle you.
Nothing I wrote was untrue.
What do you mean? That book makes me have to be like Lee Harvey Oswald.
It's an honest account of our marriage.
I think I'm still in love with Yale.
You are, or you think you are?
I started seeing him again.
I'm shocked. I'm shocked. I'm surprised.
Look, I love her. I've always loved her.
So what, you liked her now? You don't like her? You did like her? You know, it's still early. You can change your mind one more time before dinner.
You are so self-righteous, you know? I mean, we're just people. We're just human beings, you know? You think you're God.
I gotta model myself after someone.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Problematic Fave Podcast. I would like to welcome two amazing guests to this podcast. First off, we have the writer of Easter Sunday, Ken Chang.
Hello.
Hey, Ken, how are you?
I'm extremely excited to be here with you two and to talk about this movie that we're about to talk about.
And also we have writer for shows like, oh my God, actually, Dentley, why did I put Brownish? Man,
that's
I'm like
good.
Racist. I'm racist. shows like Mixed-ish and the upcoming That 90s Show and the co-host of the Yo, Is This Racist podcast, Andrew. Ooh. T. Hi, Andrew. You're late.
Listen to you. You're all prepared. I don't like having a journalist who actually does shit.
I know. I get my shit together.
Because normally journalists do not do shit.
Harrowing.
nor are they this prepared ever.
Yeah, I don't
really?
I don't like this.
Okay, we're gonna have to like do a sidebar on that because apparently y'all haven't been in touch with proper journalists. Also, journalism is like a dying art anyway, so whatever.
Yeah, that is true.
And you're killing it.
Thank you. Both of y'all are killing it.
I think he meant that literally, that you are literally killing the profession
let
of
the,
journalism.
Let it live. Let it live in
no,
a little ambiguity,
like, I felt,
Ken.
I felt like Dino was taking that far too positively, and I didn't want to start off on it.
Well, no. I kind of was taking it as like, I'm killing it, that I'm doing a good job. Also,
yeah.
I'm killing it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm killing people. I'm murdering people.
Don't patronize Dino. This is your fault, Ken. You're making things worse.
And then,
I picked the movie, so.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this.
This is my fault.
This is your fault.
So, with this episode,
we're breaking the format. Yeah.
We're breaking the format. Going in.
Wait, what is the format exactly?
Wait,
I have not listened to previous episodes.
No, you're fine. Oh my God, I'll edit that out. We're going to definitely lean in to the problematic fave with this choosing of the movie Manhattan, written and co-written and directed by Woody Allen.
Correct.
I know.
Imagine being the
actual writer on this fucker.
Yeah, and also Marshall Brickman. What else did Marshall Brickman?
A little movie called Annie Hall he co-wrote.
Oh, there you go.
You're not. So, this isn't making things better, Ken. The format breaking thing is normally. I feel like your guest. This is a fave. I can pick this movie. We are here together because Ken refuses to go on a podcast on his own.
And, oh my God!
I went on your podcast on my own, sir.
Ken needs a security blanket. Which is me, but I have never,
as well as in podcasts,
I have never liked this movie, and the rewatch confirmed it.
So here's the thing. Yeah. So Andrew is breaking the format.
Yeah. I'm the equivalent of like a hostile witness.
Yeah. And then also I haven't watched this movie. I was telling this to Ken before we start recording. I haven't watched this movie since I was in college. I took a film class, I remember, and we had to watch this. And of course I was like, I didn't care. I treated this as homework. So I probably barely watched it. And I was, you know, it was like early 2000s. I was wearing JNCOs and had orange hair. And that has nothing to do with anything, but that's just kind of give you a picture of that.
World building is part of something, Dino. If we can't picture it, then how can we know how you're reacting?
I know. This was at Texas A&M University, y'all, as well. So that's where I went to school, which at the time was 88% white. So that's another conversation. But Ken, why did you choose this?
What is wrong with you, Ken?
Ken, why did you choose this? Why, joking aside,
yes,
with some joking, but why did you choose this? Why did you do this to us?
So, when thinking about the title of your podcast, "Problematic Fave," that it was the clear first choice that came to mind, because not only is the movie and the person most responsible for its existence highly problematic, but it's also happened to be one of my favorite movies of all time.
I will always state
that my stance on this movie.
Okay, yeah, let's start with that, the stance.
Yeah, no, my general stance on the movie is that Manhattan is my favorite movie ever from a guy that I think belongs in jail at the very least, or should
wait. There's multiple ones of those now.
Or should do the world a favor and jump off the Manhattan Bridge that he's so prominent.
Oh my God, no! You jump off the Brooklyn Bridge so that people on the Manhattan Bridge can see it. Ken, you don't know jack shit about New York City, and that's why I don't understand what you love about this.
Wait.
Movie.
Anyway,
okay. No, I think
that's the trick. All the suckers who think the romantic thing to do is walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, you're wrong. You walk across the Manhattan Bridge, so you can see the Brooklyn Bridge.
Wait, so you think jump off the Brooklyn Bridge?
Yeah.
Okay, because I walked across the Brooklyn Bridge. Once.
Well, I was talking about jumping off the bridge that he prominently features in the poster of the movie. Anyway,
but I
think Andrew has a point, which is that. So I, like you, Dino, first saw this movie in college, and at a time when I was very much thinking about moving to New York to pursue a completely different life that I ended up choosing. And this movie sort of informed this romantic idea, this notion I had of New York.
Yeah.
So it was your Sex in the City. It was your Sex in the City, basically. Like, you know?
Girls love, you know, Sex in the City, and they were like, I want to go to New York and be Carrie Bradshaw.
It was less that I wanted to be anybody in any of the characters in the movie, because one of the other things this movie did for me very early on was help me sort of understand this idea that you can enjoy a movie in which you hate all the characters. You know what I mean? in which all the characters are despicable pieces of shit, except for, you know, like one or two. And that was like a way that you can make movies, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think so. But
yeah.
Before we really get into it,
I just realized I have seen this movie exactly two times, once when I was 17 and once when I was 42. And those are very different ages.
Oh, yeah.
Very relevant ages.
Those are the relevant ages of this movie. And I did, because I watched it like freshman year of college. I will say the difference possibly for me is I watched it in New York. One of my dickhead friends at Columbia was like, you gotta watch Manhattan. It's a love letter to Manhattan.
Where did you watch it? We just at the dorms.
Oh, we might have watched it at Film Forum or something like that. Annie Hall, we definitely watched in the dorms. Both of them, I will say the one piece of value I think those movies have for me, and most of Woody Allen's work have for me, is realizing that, because I grew up in Michigan, and I you know, went to Columbia, went to New York with like bright eyed, like, I'm making it to the but like the big city kind of shit. And those movies were the ones that were the beginning of the cracks of, oh, fuck these rich white people.
Yeah.
Like, I showed up thinking, oh, if I play my cards right, I can become one of these people. And those movies were the beginning of a process of being like, oh, no, these are despicable people.
Yeah.
By virtue of who they are. The other thing I will say is, y'all keep saying New York. This is like not even a movie about the entire island of Manhattan.
Oh, correct. New York. This is a movie about
30 square blocks in Manhattan.
Is it even 30?
How big is New York? Because I know San Francisco is 7x7, but like, do they have the dimensions?
The furthest south of Manhattan they get to is Times Square.
This movie is like, it's a little bit the same as Crazy Rich Asians calling like 20 Chinese billionaires quote unquote Asians. This movie being a movie about New York is so offensive. Manhattan is the fourth most interesting borough of New York City.
What's the most interesting?
Spoken like a true internet hipster.
Wait, are you talking about Brooklyn's the most? Brooklyn?
I mean, any Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens are all more interesting. It doesn't really matter which is which. I sort of prefer Queens, but it doesn't really matter. The most important thing is Manhattan is whack.
Whack.
Staten Island is evil, but Manhattan is whack.
Let's move on.
Well, I mean, for me, the before I had spent any significant amount of time in New York, that I would end up spending like in my 20s and 30s, my perception of New York was informed largely by Spike Lee, Martin Scorsese, and Woody Allen. Those three films.
In that order?
No. In that general triumvirate of filmmakers.
Okay, so like, Manhattan was released. Okay, this is
1979.
Manhattan was released. The premiere of it was April 18th, 1979. But then it got a release on April 25th, 1979. April 18th, 1979 is the day I was born. Like, that's like the exact day I was born.
That's the exact day, meaning it's your birthday.
That's my born.
Dino came out, I was like, I heard some bullshit just dropped. I have to correct this.
They're like, I was like, Mom, hurry up, get this going, because I heard Manhattan's being released. I gotta go.
I gotta be born before that happens.
So it stars Ken's favorite person in the world, Woody Allen. Diane Keaton, Michael Murphy, Mariel Hemingway, which we will get into.
Mariel Hemingway.
Meryl Streep and Anne Byrne, Michael O'Donoghue, and Wallace Shawn makes his
Michael Murphy.
And yeah, oh, I said Michael Murphy already.
He did.
As Yale. As Yale. Yeah.
Oh, my bad.
The here's the then I just I'll read the summary from Rotten Tomatoes because I think their summaries are good. Director Woody Allen's love letter to New York City stars Allen as frustrated television writer Isaac Davis, a twice divorced malcontent facing middle age alone after his wife Jill Meryl leaves him for a woman, which I forgot about that queer element. Isaac is dating fresh-faced Tracy, Mariel Hemingway, a high school girl he knows is wrong for him, and begins to wonder if he and brainy writer Mary Diane Keaton, the mistress of his best friend, Yale, Michael Murphy, might make a better couple. Lots going on there.
Fresh face is doing a lot of heavy lifting in that description of Mariel Hemingway.
That just means illegal. Right.
I mean,
what it should say is underage. Yes.
I genuinely was like, okay, I guess it was a norm. I did not realize it literally is addressed in the movie. She turns 18 and is like, I'm legal now. I forgot about that part. Yeah. That shit is crazy.
I don't think you ought to go to London.
I have to go. I mean, all the plans have been made. Arrangements. I mean, my parents are there now looking for a place for me to live.
Do you still love me or what?
Do you love me?
Yeah, that's what. Of course, that's what this is all about.
You know. Guess what? I turned 18 the other day. I'm legal, but I'm still a kid.
You're not such a kid. 18 years old. You know, you can. They could draft you. You know that in some countries you'd be. You look good.
You really hurt me.
It was not on purpose. You know. I mean, You know, it's just the way I was looking at things then.
Well, I'll be back in 6 months.
6 months? Are you kidding? 6 months you're gonna go for?
We've gone this long. I mean, what 6 months if we still love each other?
Hey, don't be so mature, okay? I mean, 6 months is a long time. 6 months, you know, you're gonna be working in a theater there. You'll be with actors and directors. You know, you go to rehearsal and you hang out with those people. You have lunch a lot, and before you know it, attachments form. And you know, I mean, you don't want to get into that kind of. I mean, you'll change. You know, you'll be 6 months. You'll be a completely different person.
Don't you want me to have that experience? I mean, a while ago, you made such a convincing case.
Yeah, of course I do. You know, but you know, I mean, I just don't want that thing about you that I like to change.
I've got to make a plane.
Come on, you don't have to go.
Why couldn't you have brought this up last week?
The beginning of the movie is like, it's like Gershwin Rhapsody in Blue. It's like, oh my God, you know,
it's a prologue. I don't care what anybody says. I love the prologue of this movie.
I'm not gonna lie. Oh, Andrew's the minority here.
Andrew
hates everything. Who cares?
I'm the only minority here, apparently.
I'm like I'm the midway point between the two of you, which is why, because I appreciate that kind of portrait of Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Granted, again, like Andrew said,
20 streets, 4 avenues.
It's very specific, but also this has been copied and like, you know, it's like Rhapsody in Blue is now. Yeah, it's like, oh my God, Gershwin, New York, blah, blah, blah.
Well, it's important to point out that the whole movie is scored to orchestral renditions of Gershwin classics, right?
Okay, music theory. Come on.
Is it?
No, but the other interesting thing that I always found hilarious about this movie is that by all accounts, this is Woody Allen's least favorite of his movies.
Yes.
He like absolutely hates it.
That is the one thing I agree with him about.
Which, in a way, makes me feel less bad about liking the movie as much as I do.
While I was watching this movie, I was just like, every time it was Woody Allen on screen and Mariel Hemingway, I was all, this is, you can't, like, if you watch it now, you can't get past that. And then, therefore, that distracts you from the rest of the movie. And you can't just take the movie for what it is. And that's kind of where I was at. I was just like, all gross. This is just disgusting and whatever. I will say, I kind of like Diane Keaton in this movie. She is a horrible person, but she is that arty, that kind of pseudo-intellectual, like a lot of us.
It's such an inverse of the character she had just played previous in
Woody Allen. Annie Hall. I see.
Yeah, because Annie Hall was 1977.
So she made two movies right before this one. So it was Annie Hall and Interiors, which was like a Bergman ripoff. It's not that great. It's not that good. It's such a different character from her. And it was funny. I was rewatching this movie with my wife, who knows how much I love this movie.
Does your wife like it?
She did, and it does not anymore.
I will just say,
watching this again,
it's just like boring and pointless to me. It's like I found the opposite of like the oh, these are horrible people, and it was like, yeah, and they're, it's like pointless. I so dislike them that I'm like, I don't enjoy spending any time with literally anyone in this movie, to the point where I'm like, I don't know. This never has felt redeemable to me in a way that I'm just like, what? What are we doing?
Well, I'm like, let me ask you this. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh no, both of you are writers. Not like, you know, I'm a journalist. I'm a different kind of writer, but you guys write TV and film. Is this like to you a well-written, solid script?
I don't think it is.
Okay. I mean, not in like any traditional way.
Yeah.
It's just like a long, tedious series of sketches.
I believe there are, and rewatching this last night sort of
knowing that you'd be sitting across from me on the Zoom.
It's funny, Andrew was texting me as he was rewatching it, and as I and my wife were just like fast forwarding.
I should have texted y'all too.
I've seen it so many times. Like, I was trying to refresh my memory. I don't think it's like as Andrew was saying, it's not a traditionally well-written movie. I do think there are particular jokes and lines of dialogue in the movie that I still love to this day.
That's so crazy to me.
Yeah.
There are like kind of these moments. Like, there was one line that I like.
I bet you I can guess which.
I think Yale was saying this to Woody, Isaac, saying, he says, "You think you're God," and he says, "I gotta model myself after someone."
Somebody.
And yeah, I thought that. Oh, really?
His whole point was, you're too easy on yourself, to Yale, and Yale rebuts by saying, "Well, you think you're God," and then replies, "Well, I gotta model myself after."
I mean, this is also just like comedy fades. Like, I actually think it's fine that I don't find it funny, but I genuinely do not find a single second of really any Woody Allen movies to be funny, like, quote unquote, actually funny.
Oh yeah, like I wasn't like laughing. And
I would never ever laugh. And this was before all the shit. I'm just like, but it's fine. They're like 20-year-old movies. The single scene I did like, I didn't really like the actual way it was executed, but when he's, the one scene with his son at the Russian tea room.
Yes, that was on my list of things to talk about.
I do like when adults talk to children like the children are adults, like as a general vibe.
He's talking about picking up women with the sun.
It wasn't like particularly great, but that was the only moment I liked in the movie, for real.
My favorite line of dialogue in the movie occurs sort of during the Central Park carriage ride, where
they're making out in the backs, like the carriage.
That part's tough. But I think I've seen a lot of Woody Allen's movies, and I think the single most romantic quote unquote traditionally romantic line of dialogue he's ever written is when he tells Tracy that you are God's answer to Job, and there's like a whole bit that comes along with that. I always love that line.
Oh, Andrew's gonna implode.
I was pretty zoned out by that point. I was kind of like gray rocking through all of the Muriel Hemingway stuff. I was just like, I'm not part of this.
Well, it's like
I just can't.
This is kind of the for. I'm judging Ken on this, but this is of a problematic phase. But we have a lot of these, right? It's like, yeah, this one is like, I like, knowing nothing about Woody Allen, I see the appeal in this. It's not necessarily for me. Like, if I, you know, like, it's just
For me, look, I love so many of the sort of like this, some of the like the more crafty elements of the movie, this like the cinematography, for example. To me,
who was the DP on this?
Gordon Willis, the Prince of Darkness, quote unquote.
That's why he did such a good job.
He shot Annie Hall, among others, and her sister. But he's most famous for shooting the Godfather movies.
I agree with you.
Cinematography's fucking amazing. Yeah. I mean, it's anamorphic, black and white, covered in shadow.
If that is what you take out of the movie Manhattan, which I agree is probably the most worthwhile piece of it, just buy a fucking Gary Winogrand book. Like, there's nothing in the movie Manhattan.
I don't know who that is.
I'm just saying, like there's nothing in it that like a couple dozen photographers from the 70s didn't do better. Like, honestly. I mean, those are the facts. I don't know this guy. I don't have time to care who you just Gary Winogrand, Helen Levitt. You know, you don't need to.
Andrew is a photographer, or whatever.
No, that's
what I mean. I'm just saying. If the value of that, here's the thing that I had like sort of clocked this, but like didn't really appreciate it until rewatching this movie, which is like, and this is literally just like a Twitter thing. That stuck with me talking
this
about
this is where I
we'll find out talking like basically it was in that sort of endless Twitter discourse about therapy, and a thing that someone said that I literally don't remember who, I'm not being coy with the someone, I just don't remember who it was that like therapy doesn't automatically make you a good person or a better person. It just makes you like better at being you. And the example was like Woody Allen is sort of famously one of the most therapized people on earth, and isn't a good person. He's just good at, you know, being him. He's the best version of himself, which is a completely repellent person. And that was the thing that I noticed is like, I think he has the belief that pointing out his flaws insulates those flaws from existence. That's what this whole movie felt. This whole movie felt like a sort of like defensive, and then a like, okay, but if I say it, it felt like him getting out ahead of everything in a way that, well, I was like, huh.
It's interesting. It's interesting that Andrew brings up that point, because there's two things that makes me immediately think of. It's like, while we were watching the movie last night, my wife and I had the conversation of like, what a interesting choice to not just make the Tracy character call her 19 years old, because you would have kept the exact same dynamic at the heart of the conflict of the movie between Isaac and Tracy, right, being the age gap, and still would have skirted sort of the legality issues of seeing dating an underage girl, and yet he's still to Andrew's point, it's almost as if getting by putting it out there and confronting it numerous times in the
quote unquote confronting it, not actually, but just like it's like just sanitizing it. It's like giving people, and it extends to other shit. It's like if people in a quote unquote comedic movie call you a narcissist enough, then like it becomes hack to point out when you're actually acting like a narcissist. I genuinely think it's like whatever the opposite of projection is, it's like trying to create the perception of projection against you by saying the thing first that you are.
Yeah, like beating someone to the punch. Like saying, yeah. I already know.
It's interesting. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because that his ending, the ending of the movie is yes, that in exactly that. Form.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people misread that ending as like this real, as this sort of romantic, bittersweet moment between the characters as she prepares to head off to London. And it has always been sort of my reading of the movie that it is Woody Allen flaunting his selfishness yeah. to the audience. Yeah, and yeah. he had this amazing, her lines of dialogue or something to the point of like, not everyone gets corrupted. You have to have a little faith in people. I think those are the last lines of dialogue in the movie. And he has this like really subtle eye roll and smirk that the movie ends on before cutting to like more pastiche shots of the city that tells you entirely what he thinks of what she just said, which is that, well, obviously I don't have anything because I am, you know, the simple yeah. fact that I am here trying to talk you out of going to London in the last minute is the kind of person I am, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's what Andrew was saying. It's like he points out that, you know, this is I am. I'm never this is the way I am. And I think it's like this character refuses to change.
But know? Also, yeah. Woody, it's like pointing out flaws at Woody Allen. And it's just like, I'm like, it's just not clever, I guess. I'm not taken by it, like personally. Mm. I'm just like, I don't know. Okay. Like the whole movie is so tedious feeling for a 90-minute movie,
which by the way I appreciate. I love me a 90-minute movie.
I was shocked at how like, oh my god,
his movies are usually like 90
they're
minutes
short
every scene. Yeah. But again, like showing a Manhattan like devoid of people of color, I'm sure.
Oh no, there's that one scene where those black people walk out of Zabar's.
Yeah,
I'm sure you know what, and I'm sure he thinks of himself as a non-white person.
But they were like African people walking out.
You have to then, if you're going to point out, you have to contextualize because it actually makes it actually adds to Andrew's point. The reaction that Woody has as these two men in like traditional African garb walk out of Zabar's, and he's like stunned by the sight.
Diane Keaton, both of them
It's part of a montage, right? Like, so there's no like dialogue.
This is very montage heavy. I love me a good montage, but sometimes sometimes you have to reel it in. One montage per movie, because there were like five in this one, right?
There are a few. No, there's like there's a couple. There's
like
a couple.
Three.
It's not too many.
I like the montages. That's prime phone time for me. That's me. That's me texting.
Oh, that's
Ken.
Why
the,
you probably
the fuck is going on here.
That's probably why you miss the Africans walking out of Zabar.
I think it actually is. legitimately. Here's what else I will say, and sort of like whatever you think about what the author of this movie is saying, the audience and the reality is also says a different thing. I watched this on my Amazon account, which I rarely use, so it had a
suggestion.
I think disproportionate effect on my suggestions, and literally all of the now my suggestions are Woody Allen movies, or tellingly movies. The top two movies that I noticed and I didn't scroll any further are movies with an underage person.
Ew.
It was Licorice Pizza and American Beauty came right up. So like it or not. The one theme that the algorithm has noticed that the human population in like puts together when you watch Manhattan is pedophilia.
One problematic fave begets two more.
It really is like, okay.
Basically, Woody Allen broke ground for a whole new genre of underage romantic comedies.
Or you can say he's the proud proud herald of like Plato.
That is wild. Well, you know what? Shout out to the Prime Video algorithm. You know,
I was just like, Ken, you need to rethink a lot of shit about your life.
Okay, and also, you know what? They, you know what words they say a lot in this movie that make me like cringe? When everyone says, let's go make love, I'm all, oh. I'm like, oh. They're like, oh, why does he like this when we make love? Or, and I'm like, oh, I would argue that saying making love is worse than saying fuck. Like, I want to fuck you. I would rather have you say I want to fuck you than I want to make love to you. Opinions.
It's 2022.
Oh, is this?
It sounds that much worse.
Yeah.
Honestly... Have you ever told someone, let's make love?
Yeah, Ken.
No, I'm actually thinking about that. I don't think I have.
I have never, because I'm a big old hoe.
Yeah.
I'm not romantic. I'm like, Andrew's all, yeah.
No, I mean, yeah. But that's just, I honestly,
just
like,
me being, yeah.
I know I'm like an old, or not old, I'm the opposite of old. I am not sentimental about anything. I think comedies are and should be disposable. Like, it's fine, like, taste change. Yeah. Like, comedy is about, you know, subverting expectations, and like, all the expectations are not subverted anymore by Manhattan. And I get that they probably were, like, romantic comedies before that were not about, like, people that look like Woody Allen and the people that act like Woody Allen. That's, like, fine, I get it.
Yeah, it's weird that people consider this a romantic comedy, because I don't think
it's, sure, or whatever the fuck it is. Yeah, I think it's neither. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm like, again, but Annie Hall, let's say. Like,
Annie Hall is, for sure. Well, Annie Hall, that's one of the things that that always sort of made me like this movie more than Annie Hall. Beyond the fact that it's, like, traditionally more beautiful from, like, a cinematic standpoint, like, knowing what Annie Hall created in terms of, like, this wave of influence Annie Hall had on like, American independent films in general, but specifically romantic comedies, sort of like this, you know, hyper meta, sort of self, hyper self-aware, you know, smirky, ironic take on relationships and stuff. I mean, I always think of 500 Days of Summer, a movie I absolutely cannot stand.
So that's your Manhattan, because everyone loves that movie.
I don't know anybody that loves that movie. Do you love that movie?
I remember watching it.
I think some people remember watching it. I've never met anybody that actually loves.
No, it's not as, like, heralded as a Manhattan.
I don't know if that's true. Is it? I think, to me, I just, like, don't. They're like, if you don't agree with the fundamental premise that there's something worth watching about Woody Allen as an actor, and that includes to the films that he has that don't star him, because there's always a character that speaks like him. Mm-hmm. It's not as bad as, like, David Mamet, where every character speaks like David Mamet, but, like, it's just some shit where I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't find this to be funny or charming at all. And so... Mm. The premise falls completely flat. Like, it's not just like, okay, you need people to look or act a certain way. But I'm just like, I am not charmed by this type of like, neuroticism, I guess. Like, so, like, I don't know. Like, I don't see anything to it. And thus everything else just feels like, and knowing that he directs all of them. So it's like, what are you saying? Like,
yeah.
What are you trying to say? Like, yeah, women throwing themselves at you, you're making these corny jokes. I'm like, all right, yeah, sure.
I think that, like, there was a time when I kind of was like, oh, Woody Allen, you know? That's, because I need to watch it again. Blue Jasmine, I was living in San Francisco when Blue Jasmine was filmed there.
Yeah. I think I was too.
Yeah, and then I remember, guess who else is in Blue Jasmine? Louis C.K.
Wait, he was?
Yes.
I don't remember.
He was because I
Kate Blanchett goes out with him. Yes.
So
You know what? I never rewatched Blue Jasmine. Wasn't one of my favorites.
Well, because she won the Oscar, right? I think she won the. She got lauded for it.
I was very excited at the time at the thought of Woody Allen making a San Francisco movie,
which is great because, like, I live, like, I was in Soma. I saw them filming. Yeah. Great.
Yeah.
You know? And then I went to the I went to a comedy show with Louis C.K. Whatever. Mm-hmm. What's Cap City? One of those, the main San Francisco comedy clubs. I forgot. Well, there it was already. But he did this like impromptu show. There was nothing prepared. He paid for everyone in the audience, and Cate Blanchett was like, all our food was paid for by him, and Cate Blanchett was in the audience, and I was like, oh, Louis C.K. is a good guy.
I mean, to be fair, did you have any reason to think otherwise at that point?
No. You're but
Ken's resting heavily on how could we have known in the moment as
well.
But you know what?
But with Woody Allen, it is Woody Allen's entire like oeuvre is like some Mr. Police, I gave you all the clues shit. I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, and
you know why none of his bad behavior is surprising? Because I have watched a couple Woody Allen films. Like, I don't know. I'm just not surprised.
Yeah, because he went through that. He went because
like the dude that would do the things he did.
Like watching Vicky Cristina Barcelona, and then like that that age of like Match Point, and where he was. I don't know what he was trying to do.
Well,
during
by
that
Match
time.
Match Point, he that was in the I am now unrepentantly repeating myself.
Yes, yes.
Era of his career, because Match Point also, is just a remake of Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Yeah, and I was just like, okay,
set in England.
And then watching Midnight in Paris. Is that it? Midnight in Paris? Is
Midnight in Paris, yeah. I like Midnight Jesus in Paris, Christ. Actually.
What's the actual... Okay, what in theory is the actual like Woody Allen movie that might... That I might be like, okay, I think this is good. Like, for real, for real.
Maybe Midnight in Paris?
I don't know. Midnight in Paris? No.
Blue Jasmine is very neurotic because Cate Blanchett is out of control. Like, she's having like
a nervous breakdown. It's not a fun movie by any means. Yeah. I don't know. Let me think. Broadway Dane Rose, maybe?
I just don't find any of
them. Match Point because it's violent. No, I'm not sure. Midnight in Paris, I think maybe. No?
I kind of like Hannah and Her Sisters. Hannah and Her Sisters is a...
Is that the
and then
one?
You'll come back right. on. Y'all will come back on.
He's in that one. Of the movies that he is in, I think that's the one he's in the least.
Or any of his movies.
Yeah, that's...
Bananas. Bananas is his best movie.
Bananas. Bananas.
That's, I think, really one of...
I'm not super familiar with it, like his earliest stuff. It's interesting because, like, you know, you were talking about Marshall Brickman earlier, and you know, filmmakers have... especially like the quote-unquote auteurist filmmakers, they have this period where they work with somebody who clearly helps them produce their best work, right? It's like Marshall Brickman co-wrote arguably, you know, Woody Allen's best movies. It's sort of in the same way that Owen Wilson, speaking of Midnight in Paris, co-wrote Wes Anderson's best movies, right? And like there's some of his other movies subsequent to that would have like this very like first draft feel, right?
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think so. Annie Hall, Manhattan. I think there's, what's the other one that I can't remember. But those two are widely regarded as like two of Woody Allen's four best movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to me that those are the ones that were touched by another writer, so to speak. Mm.
Oh God.
I just.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is, you know, we're making Andrew a believer.
It is a tough rewatch, I gotta say. Like,
no, I think in general it is, because I think it's a fine movie, but like it's not for me. Like, I've come to this point in my criticism and assessments of movies because I watch so much shit that I'm just like, oh, I know this isn't for me, but for who it is for, it's gonna be fine for them.
Here's what I will say: is I find the characters to be boring and repellent, and then the like quote unquote smart people will reply, "That's the point, man," and then they will not have a rejoinder to the, but you're not saying anything about this, except for the same little thing over and over, which is like, look at how much time we spend looking at these boring and repellent people. Like, okay, that's quote unquote the point, but that means the point you had to make is like a, I don't know, two paragraph like essay worth of information. Like, you're not imparting anything. You're just like saying the same shit over and over again with whack jokes. So yeah. Like, I don't know. I simply do not care. And so it's just hard. And then on top of that, all this like, you know, horrible shit that these movies have allowed him to do. I'm just like, I don't know. This is no part of this seems worthwhile to me. Again, the worthwhile parts of this movie in particular, I can encapsulate in like four photo books on my bookshelf right now.
Photo books.
There's nothing else good about it.
I hope you appreciate the fact that he pointed out that the books that these things can be encapsulated in are on his bookshelf, which he
of course he I'm owns not. A, I'm not a fucking Philistine. Come on. Also, speaking of Manhattan, all these books were purchased used at the Strand, which I don't even know if it. I assume it's. I think still it exists.
No, it exists because they did a part. They did a partnership with someone during the pandemic for press things, which is actually kind of cool. So
I'm glad that place exists. Yeah, but just buy photo books and don't support the fucking career of Woody goddamn Allen. That's my takeaway.
Photo books are very boring. I think I'd rather watch the movie.
This movie's more boring. Photo books, you could just stop.
You could stop this too. You could press.
I really tried.
Unfortunately, nothing overrides Andrew's obligation to podcasting. He did something that he absolutely hated in order to be a part of this podcast.
Well, this movie's budget was $9 million. Estimated budget was $9 million.
What?
For 1979?
Oh, wow. For 1979, yeah.
You keep talking. I'm going to look up how much that is because that feels fucking crazy.
$9 million. Well, its domestic opening was $485,000.
1979?
Yeah, 1979. Domestic gross is $39.9 million. And worldwide gross is $40.2 million. Currently has a 94% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 92% audience score. Mariel Hemingway got Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress. Allen and Brickman got it for best screenplay, original screenplay. I do not agree with the Mariel Hemingway thing because I don't, even if I didn't like her character or whatever, I just was like, oh, she really, maybe it's because she was the most mature one in that movie, that character. But,
well, she's the only character that is even remotely redeemable in the movie.
Yeah.
She's the pure character of the
but I was like, an Oscar character. Nomination? I don't think so.
Do y'all want to know? In 1979, $9 million is $36.7 million today.
Wow. What movie was made for around that much today that we can comp that to?
Andrew, can you please?
I mean, with wasn't
Crazy Rich Asians was like what 25, 30 ish? So something around that scale? Yeah.
No, it was more than that.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, 30 million. Yeah. This was made for more money than Crazy Rich Asians. Looks like shit, homie.
Really? Are you serious? Like shit.
Yeah.
There are no movie stars in this movie.
The budget
Where did it go?
To
shooting in New York.
Yeah, probably
it sounds like.
Oh. Fucking
it got
everything about this movie makes me madder and madder.
I'm sorry, but you know, fun fact: Meryl Streep filmed her scenes for this while filming Kramer versus Kramer during her breaks. It got a bunch of BAFTA noms, New York Films Critics Circle.
Win Woody Allen
it didn't win any Oscar
at Con. No, I don't care about.
Oh no, I don't think it won any major awards. I don't think it did.
Really?
I'm not sure. I may be wrong. I'm sure everyone will come after me for that. But and then it was
The Woody Allen stands. All the Woody Allen.
all of Ken's friends will be coming
more
for
than
me.
More than you think.
And it got. It got on a bunch of AFI lists, all these lists are gross. Never mind, I'm not even.
Are you just on the wiki page right now looking up?
Yeah, no, I actually cut and pasted all of that shit. So okay, if y'all want to know more about it, go to Wikipedia. But final thoughts about this because. I do appreciate, again, I appreciate the movie, but I ain't gonna watch it again.
That's understandable.
But Ken and and Andrew have clear
points of view. I thought
Andrew's going to turn it on as soon as we sign off and rewatch.
I will just say I had a thought, like, you know, glibness aside, I did think watching it, I literally have watched it once when I was 17, once when I was 42, and I did have a glimmer of like, and I am like a single fucking dirtbag living in LA. not dating your Muriel Hemingways, but I guess I would. Not a 17-year-old, but you know what I'm saying.
Oh,
like,
oh, so yeah, I guess.
No, but truly, I was like, you know, I have a similar type of self-loathing, and I'm way funnier than this motherfucker. So yeah. will I see more of myself in the Isaac character than I did when I was 17, when I just thought he was like a gross old man, and I did not. And that's when I was like, oh, I don't think Woody Allen has ever had anything to say to me. Specifically, like, I just, there's nothing there. It's like completely empty.
Yeah, I don't think he's telling like, what, back then he wasn't telling stories to reach an
audience. But not even stories. Yeah, but like point of view, anything. Yeah. Like, I'm simply like at best completely disinterested. It's just like so tediously nothing.
See,
not repellent.
This is why I made this podcast, because I'm in the middle of the you two, and I again, it's just like, it's too late to, like, you know, bring back, you know, that time and say, hey, let's not pay attention to this movie. You know, we didn't know any better. We're moving on. Mariel Hemingway, even in her biography, said Woody Allen treated her with respect, but he did come onto her once.
That is
Wait, do we know how old she was when she made
16.
This movie?
She was 16.
Oh, so she was of the age of the character.
The character was 17. She was 16.
She really looks young in this. It is like,
yeah, I mean,
like in that opening shot when I didn't remember who everyone was, I was like, is that supposed to be Yale and what's her name's daughter? Like, I was like, that's what I thought was happening. And then it was like, you know what? I don't know which is grosser, that he's hitting on their daughter in front of them, or he brought this person as his date.
I hadn't seen the movie in a while. It was very formative to, like, my early, still just thinking about pursuing a career in Hollywood in screenwriting.
So you connect with it on a level that isn't like, oh my god,
oh,
I'm
it's,
just like,
it's
Woody
purely
Allen.
it's purely sentimental, the extent or degree to which I connect with this movie. Yeah. It is incredibly difficult to rewatch now with knowledge of, sort of like, with greater insight into sort of the behind the scenes elements of the movie. And, you know, I've never been particularly interested in this, in the sort of conversation of art versus artist or whatever, like, yeah, appreciating art made by problematic artists. Like, I don't really care. And I was never part of any larger sort of internet conversation about Woody Allen post the Ronan Farrow's book.
Yeah, Ronan
Farrow's book.
Or even Sun Yi or whatever her name is, you know.
Yeah, again, yeah. Even the shit that was above the table was like, this is not cool. This is not remotely okay.
I'm glad we participated in this exercise together.
Well, before we sign off, like, where can we find y'all on the socials? I know Andrew is a little bit more active than
just
Ken.
look for Ken on IMDb Pro, Ken Chang. Get that star meter up every time you click on his profile. They you know, it goes a little to the star meter.
Go look up Ken Chang, the British comedian.
Who is most often credited
for the stuff that I do.
Yeah.
He's not terrible.
You know what? You Google Ken Chang, that's who you get. That's the pictures you get. Okay.
That's what I want.
You just find me
on Twitter and Instagram, and my podcast is Yo, Is This Racist? And that's it. Watch 90s Show, I guess.
Which,
I don't know.
Which I was on a few weeks ago.
Yes. That's true. Yeah, you can go find Ken. Ken was
if you want.
Very charming.
If you want
on
more,
it.
if you want more of the Andrew T. Ken Cheng,
no, you know what?
This vibe.
You get a full hour of it on that this, podcast.
This another full hour after this.
Yeah.
But no, yo, thank y'all so much because y'all.
Thanks
are
great. For having us.
Thank you for being you.
Thanks, Dino.
And thank you for making me rewatch this.
Thanks for rewatching this movie, as painful as it might have been upon
it
my
really,
request.
It's just boring. So boring. Boring when it's not horrible.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank y'all for listening, and thank you, Ken and Andrew, and we'll see y'all next
Bye,
week.
Bye, gang.
Problematic Fave is presented by Diaspora and made possible by the Center for Asian American Media. Please subscribe to Problematic Fave on Apple Podcasts and give us a nice rating because we will read them and they help. Diaspora is an alternative digital film and TV publication and media platform that focuses on people of color, the LGBTQIA+ community, the disabled community, women, and other historically marginalized communities in film, TV, and media. You can visit the site at thediasporatimes.com and follow on Instagram and Twitter at @realdiaspora. Thanks for listening.